Welcome, everyone, to episode 4 of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast by Surrogacy Mentor. I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell, experienced gestational surrogate, former surrogacy agency owner, and founder of Surrogacy Mentor, where our aim is to help surrogates match with reputable surrogacy agencies for a safe, ethical, and enjoyable surrogacy journey. Marielle, our surrogate intake coordinator, is not with us today, but I do have a very special guest. And I'm excited to welcome Sharna Casadas, attorney at law at Casadas Law Firm in Texas. Hi, Sharna.
Hey, Carrie.
Nice to have you with us today. So we're going to be talking about the legal side of surrogacy, why it's important that all parties have their own separate legal representation, what's in a surrogacy contract, and basically just a general understanding of how things work on that side of things. So I'm excited to dig into that. But before we do that, I just want to share a little bit about Sharna. So Sharna is the former owner of a surrogacy agency and is an attorney practicing artificial reproduction technology in Texas. Sharna counsels private individuals, healthcare practitioners, and healthcare organizations on legal requirements and best practices for growing families. She provides the knowledge and expertise to help healthcare clients, surrogates, and parents, and for patients to start their families. So excited to have you. I know you and I have worked together on cases in the past when I had my agency, and you're just fabulous. So I'm super excited to have you today.
I'm so excited to be here. Cue the Sex and the City music for Carrie. We need drinks.
Sex and the City intro music, and this will be a party. So good. Let's just dig right in. So let's talk about, for people that maybe are considering becoming a surrogate or just starting looking into building their family via surrogacy, can you just give us like a general overview of what the legal process looks like for a gestational surrogacy journey? Let's just do a basic gloss over of like the steps from the time you meet, let's say, with a surrogate. What happens? What is your role?
Sure. So the easiest way to explain it is I often refer to the two steps, the two important legal processes in surrogacy. So that's the contract phase and the court phase. And the court phase will differ and depend on the state that the surrogate is in where she gives birth. Every state has different surrogacy laws and processes. And so that part will be different. But for the contract,
Stop you and interrupt you and be rude? So I just want to point that out. That's a super important piece that not a lot of people understand, which is the legal representation and the legal process for the surrogacy take place in the state where the surrogate resides. And why is that?
Because that state has jurisdiction. And so what that means is that state rules over it with their laws. And that is going to be the state that will be the process that you will follow.
Because that's where the baby will be born. So if you have parents that live in Tennessee and then a surrogate, the surrogate lives in Texas, the lawyers need to be licensed in Texas. And the court process needs to happen in Texas because the baby's going to be born there. And that's where all of the laws will apply.
The plan is for the baby to be born in the place that you have in the contract. To make it even more complicated, if things do change with that, you can do what's called an addendum or a second additional contract. But the first phase is the contract phase. And so for the contract phase, your intended parents will have an attorney, and then you will have an attorney. And so if you don't already have an attorney yourself, then your agency will refer you to a list of attorneys for you to interview and choose from. Just like your intended parents either often have been working with an attorney on their own or have been referred to an attorney. And so it's very important that everyone have their own legal representation. An attorney cannot represent both parties because you have competing interests. You have to protect yourselves by each having someone who looks out for each party. That's not to say that attorneys shouldn't try to like screw over the other party, but it's to make sure that your interest, what you want, is in the contract and is protected.
So not to simplify it, but like in a real estate transaction, when you're buying a house, you have a realtor that represents the buyer and a realtor that represents the seller. And that's because each person needs their own individual representation. So it's the same exact thing with surrogacy contracts. And I know a common question that I get all the time is, but who pays for each attorney?
The intended parents. So as the surrogate, you should not be out of pocket for any legal expenses. This is not your baby. And so you should not have to pay for that. If someone did, you know, ask you to pay, that is a giant red flag. I mean, run, because they're asking you to pay for the legal fees related to their parenthood. And so you need to definitely avoid that.
So just to clarify, because again, this is another common question. So that if I'm a surrogate, especially a first-time surrogate who's never done this before, and maybe I'm not even working with an agency, and my intended parents say, we're paying for the attorney, therefore we want to pick the attorney for you. What's your opinion on that?
That would make me very uncomfortable, because it's like, for instance, saying, we have an OB for you, you're going to go to this OB for the pregnancy, and you don't have a say in this. Would you feel comfortable with that? I wouldn't. Maybe some people are okay with that. A concern of mine would be, is this attorney experienced in surrogacy law? Even earlier today, I got a call from a surrogate who was on an independent match, and she had matched with someone who, her intended parents had an attorney who was not an experienced surrogacy attorney. I had to explain that I couldn't take on her case because her interests, I couldn't protect them. If it's two experienced surrogacy attorneys, then they have the experience and the knowledge to look out for the journey and the different problems that can arise. But if you have someone who is not, that's when we see troubles arise. That's when you see litigation in court, when people go to fight over things. Because they have someone who, would you have your dermatologist do your IVF? No, I wouldn't. Right. Would you have your pediatrician do your heart surgery on your adult spouse? I wouldn't. It's the same thing. And that's where it's great when you have an agency versus independent, because in these independent cases, people don't know that. And right. Versus agency, where an agency is going to say, we will only work on your case if you are going to work with an experienced attorney, because they don't want that headache either.
And you actually read my mind, because the next thing I wanted to bring up was people saying, oh, my cousin's a real estate attorney, or my friend's boss's son's sister's husband is a social security attorney. I'll just have them do it because they'll do it for like really cheap. And why, you just explained why it's important, but how does somebody know that an attorney is considered an experienced surrogacy attorney? What are the differentiators?
Sure. One differentiator is they will be practicing this full time. I will be asking them, how many years have they done this? How many cases have they done? What organizations are they connected to through their work? You can often ask if they have experience at different clinics, different agencies. That will give you a taste of their knowledge. But also, if you just ask them questions, if they get quiet, they don't know what they're talking about. When I'd spoken to someone also earlier who said, I called some different attorneys and they gave me the names. I've never heard of these people. I've been doing this 10 years. And here in Texas, and if they can't answer your questions and they don't know basic knowledge about surrogacy, then how are they going to protect you? Because this is not a simple process. Surrogacy law, you have to understand family law, some healthcare law, a little bit of insurance law, as well as the practical process, the medical process. And if you don't know that, you're unfamiliar with that, I would not get involved with that at all.
Okay. You're just really setting me up for success here, because that's the perfect segue to what I wanted to talk about next, which is, let's go over what are the basic things that are in a surrogacy contract. So when you're putting together a contract or reviewing a contract that's been put together by the other attorney, what are the basic things that should always be in a surrogacy contract?
So number one, the contracts should set out what laws will take place and guide the process. The legal process, as far as the court process, what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, is also contingencies. So if something happens to the intended parents, if one dies, if both dies, what will happen to the baby? Who will take the baby? If you were on life support, what's going to happen with insurance with the baby? As far as in us, the practical things. So everything you can dream and want of, make a list of that. And that way, when you do receive the contract from your attorney, if it's not in there, you can address that with your attorney and add those things into the contract. So practical things such as how bills are going to be paid, who is holding escrow to make sure that everyone is protected, how insurance will be used, travel, those expenses, who's going to be in the room for checkups, who's going to be in the room for delivery, and contingencies on that, right? Because with COVID, that all threw everything for a loop at the beginning of COVID, as well as COVID shots. So are you willing to have the COVID vaccine? Are you willing to get boosters? What precautions are you willing to take? All of that should be in the contract. And that's where it's really important, I think, and having a good agency, because shoddy agency will not cover all those topics. So then you'll often see them pop up during the legal phase, during the contract phase. And then that's where feathers can be flustered. If you haven't discussed things like the COVID vaccination, and do the intended parents want it, not want it, as far as for you, and if you're in disagreement, you shouldn't move forward. That's something that if you cannot agree on big things like that, and that's where an agency really shows its value, because they will consider all of those things when matching you. So you're matched to someone you feel very comfortable with, and you don't feel like you have to settle.
Definitely. And that's why, you know, I do what I do as a former surrogacy agency owner, but now as surrogacy mentor, making sure that surrogates are paired with reputable agencies that are doing an excellent job of all of those things. It makes the biggest difference.
Yes. Okay. Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And contracts can cover, like, are you going to be in a monogamous relationship with your spouse? Making sure if you have a partner as well, that they are, whether it's your partner or your spouse, that they are tested by the IVF physician beforehand. Because the last thing that anyone would ever want is for there to be some kind of infection and for it to affect the baby.
And that's a good point, right? Because not all surrogates are partnered or married. And so you have a single surrogate who's dating actively. Obviously, the surrogate has a right to have a life and to be dating and all of these things, but the parents also have a right to protect the health of their child. So there are things in the contract that anticipate that and just say specifically, like you said, you'll be tested, your partner will be tested, they'll make sure there's no risk to the baby, those things. So in general, you can tell me if this is an accurate statement, just like any other contract, but maybe even more because we're talking about people's health and babies and all sorts of really critical things. A contract is really meant to, of course, protect everyone, make sure everyone's on the same page and agrees to all of the terms, but really you're also anticipating a lot of worst case scenarios just to make sure all the bases are covered in case. The likelihood of a lot of things happening in this contract is pretty small, but you have to anticipate the worst, right, in a contract. And so some of these things might sound really weird to a lot of people, but if they're not in there and then they happen, then it can be a real problem, right?
Yes. So lawyers, we are literally trained in law school. Our brains are trained to think of worst case scenarios because we always have to look out for risk and to let our clients know about risk and so we can protect them. And gosh, we sound like a lot of fun at parties, huh?
You are fun.
So we have to look out for these things. And like I tell my clients, like, my job is to look out for risk for you. Now, I am not your boss. I am not in charge of you. These are your decisions to make. I am serving you in this legal capacity, but my job is to present these things with you so that you can make the best informed decisions and consent to things. Because otherwise, to me, that's malpractice.
Absolutely. Good. So the basics are, we didn't talk about this, but obviously another big basic that's in a contract is compensation for the surrogate.
Yes.
And how that's going, how much is going to be paid, but as well as how often will it be paid? What will trigger a payment? So talk a little bit about how compensation is structured in a contract.
And also my favorite, escrow. Explain what escrow is. Your contract will lay out all the different forms of payments, when they will be paid, the contingencies for what happens, worst case scenarios, what would happen if there was a miscarriage or a stillbirth, or there was not a pregnancy. So it should cover all of that. And it should be held, all the payments, the money should be held in escrow. Great surrogacy companies, great surrogacy agencies, they work with either attorney held escrow accounts or an escrow company that will manage all of this. And so to me, it's very important that in the contract, I have both parties having access to what is going on, because I don't want anyone being taken advantage of. So it's important that everyone have access to know that there is money in escrow, because the point of escrow is to make sure that no one gets screwed over, that the money's there, that it is going to be paid out. It's guaranteed.
Can you just back up just a little bit just to break it down into very elementary terms? What is escrow? Like, where is this money sitting and who's in charge of it? And how is it being authorized to be dispersed to the surrogate?
Yeah, so it's in a special bank account. And the person who is holding it is either an escrow agent through a company like Seed Trust, or an attorney in an attorney escrow account. That money sits there and it is paid out according to the contract. So the contract will tell you how things are going to be paid and when.
And sorry, just to clarify, so the escrow agent actually has like a special license or like a special qualification or like special protection for the money?
So all escrow companies are different, and that's where you have to ask and find out who do you trust to hold this money? Because that's a lot of money. Many intended parents have saved this money for years, or they've taken out loans, extra mortgages. And so it is really important you work with someone who does have a solid reputation and a solid track in history.
So that's another reason to have a great agency, right? Because they're going to be able to recommend qualified, licensed, insured, bonded escrow agents.
Yes. And they don't want to work with someone who is not good, because then it becomes a headache for them. So
for sure,
when everyone does everything correctly, it's really, who do I know, referring someone, who do I know is going to do a good job and do right by everyone? Because if something blows up, then it's just, it's a major headache. And, you know, one thing that is important to me when I'm either drafting or reviewing a contract is making sure that the surrogate has access to see what is going on in escrow accounts, because often I see that's not in contracts. And that's so offensive to me, because as a woman, as a feminist, I think that you're in this as a surrogate, like you're pregnant with someone else's child, like you're in the deep of this, and you want to make sure that those bills are paid. And I think you have a right to see what's going on with escrow and how much money is there and how things are being paid out to make sure your family is protected.
Absolutely. And a lot of the escrow agencies, escrow companies have an online 24/7 portal where the parents and the surrogate and the agency can log in at any time, day or night, and see exactly how much is in the account, what transactions have taken place, when's the next transaction scheduled to happen. And again, like you mentioned, all of that is dictated by what is in the surrogacy contract, which is again why it's so important to have an amazing attorney who's super qualified in surrogacy contracts, who knows that they need to put all of these things in the contract. So we know that we, as a surrogate, we need to be looking at qualified attorneys who have surrogacy experience, who are putting in all of the basic things that we need in a contract, but also anticipating all of the worst case scenarios so everyone's protected. What are, let's start with from a surrogate's perspective. If you had to name like the top three things that a surrogate should be really paying attention to in a surrogacy contract, what are the top two or three things in a surrogacy contract the surrogate should be super concerned and paying attention to, and then parents as well?
Oh gosh, only three things. Okay, in no particular order, I'm going to name. Can it be more than three?
Yeah, of course. I just didn't want you to have to come up with.
So here are some things that I often change or focus on. One, who's going to be your support person through this? Who's going to travel with you to the embryo transfer? Who will be in the delivery room? What do you envision? Okay, now make sure you have that image solidified so that you can make sure that the contract reflects that. The second thing, when are court proceedings happening? You want to make sure that there's a guaranteed timeline in the contract for when that's going to happen to protect yourself, because you don't want to be the parent of someone else's child. The third thing is making sure you have escrow and that you have visibility and that your contract states that your credit rating will not be harmed, because the intended parents are going to pay everything according to contract on time. Another one is even expectations for after the baby is born. Do you feel comfortable pumping? So are you okay with if they wanted you to nurse the baby, or would you feel okay with pumping? If so, think about everything that you need to feel comfortable and empowered to pump and make sure that's in the contract. That's one big one for me that I feel like contracts can lack, because under Obamacare, everyone can receive a pump, right, when they give birth to a child, but often they're not really good pumps. And so I suggest, like, everyone expecting you're going to need an additional $200 to get something like a Medela, and then of course accessories. And right. I say that as someone who was a milk donor to a local hospital here. Pumping is hard work and it takes a lot of time. And so even though it's at the end, I would not just discard that.
Absolutely. It's a full-time job pumping breast milk. And then depending on where the parents are, if they're in a different state or even in a different country, getting them that milk can also incur shipping expenses. I don't think you can actually ship it to a different country, but you can ship it to a different state. And that is still very expensive because it has to be frozen. Pumping is definitely something that needs to be included. And I knew a lot of attorneys, I know a lot of attorneys who actually include a full birth plan as well as postpartum plan as part of the actual contract, where they actually have like a template and it says who's going to get skin to skin care with the baby right after they're born. Is the baby going to room in with the surrogate or with the parents? And who's going to name the child? Who's going to have the bracelets at the hospital that say that they are the parents of the child? There's like tons of little things that happen that we all know happen when you have a baby. And it's not so clear to the hospital staff. Like in my case, I was married to a woman at the time and I was caring for a lesbian couple. And so the nurses would walk in and there's four women standing there with hospital bracelets on. Is that four? Yeah. There's four of us. I'm in the bed and they're like, wait, okay, you're obviously pregnant, but who's the mom? And then is there a dad? And they were very confused. And so we constantly had to keep saying like, these are the moms and this is who's going to get the baby after the birth and this is who's going to go in the C-section room with me. And so it's important to lay all that out, right, in detail. So from a parent's perspective, if you're working with a parent on a contract, what do you think are the few things that are super important for them to pay attention to?
Definitely expectations for medical care and for the delivery. And I think also for a big one that we haven't talked about is if there is bed rest, what does that look like? Yeah. Because that can get really expensive and stressful for everyone. And what do lost wages, if your surrogate is working, having a plan for that. And like we said, this does not happen all the time, but all these contingencies we plan for worst case scenarios. That way the plan is already there and we know what's going to happen. So there's no stressing out about finding a solution. The solution is already in place.
Absolutely. And just to clarify a little bit, if a surrogate works outside of the home during the pregnancy, she has a right to be reimbursed for any lost wages because of any time off of work missed due to the surrogacy, because this is not her baby. It's not her responsibility to use her vacation hours or any of her time off. And so the parents are then responsible for making sure that she's made whole and that her lost wages are covered. And so when you're talking about a situation with, like you said, bed rest, just again, to simplify it for people that maybe don't have any idea what we're talking about. If you're a surrogate and you're 9 months pregnant and your doctor says you have a condition that's going to require you to be in bed for the next 2 weeks, now you need to make sure that anytime you take off of work is reimbursed. If you have kids at home, which obviously you have to have kids because that's a primary requirement to be a surrogate. So you have kids at home that now need possibly childcare. And you're also maybe going to need your house cleaned because you can't get out of bed and wash the dishes and do the laundry. So you need help with that. So there are all sorts of expenses that kick in a situation like that, that parents and surrogates need to be contemplating in the contract.
Definitely. And not only the surrogate's lost wages and any kind of like housekeeping or childcare, especially if the surrogate has very young kids, but also the surrogate spouse. So if the surrogate spouse is going to be taking time off to do testing at the IVF clinic. And if they're going to be there for any of the medical appointments or the delivery, it is normal for there to be an allotment of time in which they can be reimbursed for their lost wages as well. Because it's a commitment on their part to take care of their spouse or their partner. And so they should not be negatively financially affected by that.
Absolutely. And if you're legally married, your spouse is going to be a party to this contract as well, so that all of these things are anticipated. And depending on the state you give birth in, and if you're married, they may also be required to sign the parentage paperwork, basically saying this wasn't my child and I'm relinquishing any rights that I may have according to the laws of this state for this baby, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So the spouse is very involved in the contract process as well, which is important to note. It's not just the surrogate if she is married. And then you said something else that I wanted to touch on, which was about, the postpartum care, not just pumping, but also, like for me, I had a C-section. And even if you don't have a C-section, even if you just have a really amazing vaginal birth and everything goes perfect, you still are going to have to recover. And so you're going to need help. And so the contract should contemplate covering not only your follow-up medical care, but lost wages, childcare, housekeeping, maybe meal service if you can't get up and cook for your family. So there are a lot of things that you have to really think about that maybe you wouldn't think about if you were just having your own baby, because if you're just having your own baby, you just have to figure it out or get family or friend support. But if you're having someone else's baby, the parents really need to step in and help out with those things, right?
Yeah, no. And it goes also both ways. I've had intended parents, been on cases with intended parents where I'm representing them or the surrogate, and they've asked, you know, can you make specific dietary changes or requests? And I always say, if you're going to ask someone for that, you have to be willing to pay for it. So yep. If you want someone to eat organic food, how are you going to pay for that? And are you going to expect your surrogate to make two different meals, one for her family and then one for herself when she's pregnant and tired? Those are all things that have to be considered.
Absolutely. I had a surrogate whose intended parents, they really felt like it was important that she have fresh salmon every week. And that stuff is expensive, like $30 yes. a pound. And so they paid her a stipend every month to make sure that she could get like the highest quality fresh salmon and have that in her diet. And she was fine. She loves salmon, but she's like, I'm not spending $200 a week on this salmon. Yeah. And they were like, we're happy to pay for it. It's rare that you have something that specific. I don't want to make it sound like this is something that's super common.
Yeah, no, that's not. But how funny would that be if that baby, when they're a toddler, they hated salmon?
Right? They're like, oh, I can't stand it. That's so funny. So just to sum up what we've talked about as we wrap up, the legal side is involved. And we didn't even talk about this part. Maybe we should talk about this for a couple minutes before we wrap up, which is, so we've got the contract, right? That's you come in and you help with the contract, and then the whole pregnancy takes place and the baby's born. And then the whole other piece that the legal covers is the parentage. So do you want to touch on that for a couple of minutes and just talk about what that looks like?
Yeah. So the court process, in most cases, it takes place during the pregnancy as well as after the pregnancy. Every state is going to have different requirements. In some states, surrogacy, commercial surrogacy, that's what they call like when you're being compensated surrogacy, it's not legal or encouraged. And so I don't want to give anyone any hope by, especially because Texas, we do have some of, if not the best surrogacy laws in the nation and a really great process. but it's important to work with someone who is very experienced in your state so they can make sure that is completed according to the state statutes, because if you don't, you're in trouble. You could be in really big trouble. You could end up as the parent of that child and then be on the hook for child support, or if you pass away, the child could inherit through you. So just once again, it's really important to work with experienced professionals who are going to protect your best interests.
And just on a very basic level, the parentage process really is just to make sure that legally the intended parents are the legal parents, that the surrogate is not recognized, the surrogate and or her spouse are not recognized in any way, shape or form as the legal parent of that child. And so the process that you're just talking about, which like you said, varies from state to state, super important that you have an attorney that's very familiar with that state's process. That process is very clear that the intended parents become the legal parent of that child. So there is a lot of work that has to be done, like you said, during the pregnancy to make sure that happens properly. But each state is going to have its own process, its own rules. Some require court appearances, most don't. A lot of them will allow you to do the process while the pregnancy is still happening, so that once the baby's born, they're automatically legally the parents. Some require what's called a post-birth, right? Post-birth process, where you actually have to file documents and do things afterwards to secure parentage. But the goal being making sure that the surrogate does not have any legal parental responsibility for the child. Obviously, super critical.
Very critical. Very critical. Because what most intended parents might not realize is the surrogate is just an invested and making sure that they have parental rights, because they don't want to have parental rights over someone else's child. They have their own children. And obviously to be a surrogate, you have to be very fertile. This would not happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that gives us a really good overview of not only what happens during the legal process, but I think more than anything, how important it is to work with lawyers and other surrogacy professionals who are super qualified and experienced, because there are a lot of twists and turns to a surrogacy journey, a lot of what-if scenarios that don't exist in any other industry. And it's a very particular industry in that sense. So people like you that know what they're doing, that have done this for many years, and that can be a really good resource for people, are just so critical to this process. So I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. And you too, Carrie. Thank you for doing this. You're doing really important work to make sure that women are protected. You're giving your all by helping someone else create their or grow their family. And it's so important that everyone is protected and respected as well.
Absolutely. I just appreciate you and your time. And that does actually bring us to the end of this episode of the Normalized Surrogacy Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Carrie Flamer Powell. I want to thank Sharna for joining us today. Be sure to check us out online at surrogacymentor.com if you're interested in knowing whether surrogacy might be right for you. We have a very easy 2-minute quiz on our website that will give you a very basic criteria for becoming a surrogate, and then we can get in touch with you for more details. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to learn more about gestational surrogacy and how to have a safe, ethical, and enjoyable journey. Thanks again, Sharna. Appreciate you. Talk to everyone
next week. Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks.